Lady Helga Hunter, Reel 2. Yes, you know, as you were saying, the life for the women must have been extremely hard. Is that the case?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my mother was an only child. She'd never been stretched. She'd never had to take much responsibility because she was spoiled by... Well, not spoiled, but, you know, as an only child. And there she was with four children. I think my mother was an absolute hero. You know, and I said that many, many times to her. I mean, she unfortunately died last year at the age of 91, but I think she had a very good life, you know, and she was a very brave woman, and so were many, many other women, you know, because there was no support. And of course, the problem about this is that the women became incredibly independent, very independent, and there were a lot of problems when the men came back from the war. In my own family, I mean, it was awful. My father couldn't cope with it, you know. And there were terrible fights and there were rows and, you know, even as a child I used to listen to him. I said, why don't they just divorce and get out, you know, he should leave, you know. But he couldn't cope with it. And of course he had the additional burden. He couldn't really talk about what he had been through, you know. I mean, you can analyze this all as an adult, but as a child you don't hear. So... Yeah, I think the women were amazing.
It was very interesting you saying earlier on, I forget the German term, but these young women who were organised to come and help the homes, it does sort of imply that the government were sort of organising to a certain extent to help the civilians.
Oh, yes.
Yes, what were they doing? Do you know...
Well, they did housework. They looked after the children. I mean, they were just like... if you want to use the term maid, you know. But, of course, they were part of the family, really. But in addition to that, we had these Polish people, you know, the prisoners of war. And I remember one young woman. I remember the smell. She used the smell of disinfectant, like mad, and they had shaved in her head. And I kept thinking, well, how do they do that, you know? But, I mean, you know now, because they were all possibly herded together in this factory, and in fact all of us, I mean, all the children had worms and had lice and that sort of thing, you know, and of course we all had, which was discovered after the war, shadows on our lungs, and we were undernourished and that sort of stuff. When the Americans came, you know, we were jabbed right, left and centre, you know. But coming back to these Pflichtjahrmädchen, that was the term they used, because it was a duty year they had to do with these families, you know. I think it must have been an organization. I've never really sort of thought about it, you know, we just accepted it.
In this country, as you probably know, Lady Hunter, the government did an awful lot, you know, in stimulating people to dig for victory, make do and mend. There were all these to eat the right food, the rationing. There was an awful lot of sort of government direction. It seems from what you were saying, there wasn't that amount.
I don't think so. No, I didn't get the impression that it was.
You were saying about the need to unpick these elastic bottoms of the beds.
Oh,
you
yes.
know, was it very difficult to get things like wool and cotton?
Oh, yes, there wasn't anything. You know, I mean, this, of course, again, this was after the war. And we had numerous flags, as you can imagine. And I remember my grandmother made dresses out of them for us, you know, for the three girls. My grandmother was a great needlewoman. She embroidered them all. I can still see these dresses. Absolutely delightful, you know. But there was nothing during the war. We didn't really have anything at all.
If I could go back to your education, you know, you said you started at the age of six,
yes.
And then it was the 11 plus at 11. When you look back now, and I know it's very difficult at the time when you're a child, because obviously this is the norm, isn't it, what's going on. Was there much indoctrination, do you think, looking back?
Oh, I think so. Yes, I think so. I mean, as I said, we had to stand there every morning saying Heil Hitler, and we had to sing patriotic songs. Oh, yes, and Hitler's birthday, we had to put flowers on his picture. Every family had to have a picture, as far as I know. and listening to the radio, I don't think my parents ever would dare listen to BBC or anything like that. They wouldn't. I mean, you listen to the radio, yes, it was all patriotic stuff, you see. Oh, yes, there was a lot of that. Very much so. And in fact, you know, one believed in it. I remember my elder sister, she was drafted into the BDM, which is the Bund Deutscher Mädchen, you know, like it's the female branch of the Hitler Jugend. And I remember they used to march through the town, and I used to march after it, being terribly sad that I couldn't join. I was too young, you know. But I mean, that was the life. That's the way we were brought up, you know. That's the way we were, if you like, indoctrinated. Of course we were indoctrinated, yes, definitely.
Yes. How about your textbooks? Do you have any memory of the sort of lessons and how these were sort of directed? Things like history and geography, were they related to the war at all?
Oh, never. No. Well, you see, it was after the war, I was in secondary education. So I don't remember the history of the primary school. No, I don't remember having had it. But, you know, after the war, we weren't told anything about Bismarck or whatever. We learned about the Romans and the Greeks, but recent history wasn't taught to us at all. And it was all kept very quiet, you know.
How about anti-Semitism at school? Did this come in at all with the indoctrination? Feelings towards the Jews?
No, actually, no, not in my school, no. This is why we didn't know about the Jews. I can tell you this quite frankly, we had no idea what was really going on. All that came after the war. Yeah, it's very difficult to really know. I'm convinced, and my mother told me, that we didn't know about the Jews. You see, one of the most important things happened when I was an adult. I worked for a Jew for 3 years in Düsseldorf, and that is the first time I really learned what happened. He never complained. He lost his wife and his child in a concentration camp, and he was a really good friend to me, and he was a very good employer. And in fact, he is the reason, or whatever he told me, is the reason why I didn't want to be German. You see, and that's when I came to this country. And I deliberately shut my ears and my eyes to anything German. I wanted to be a different nationality. I wanted to be British. So I believe my mother, because I questioned both my parents, you know, because I wanted to know as an adult. And both of them said, no, they didn't know. They knew something was happening, but they had no idea what really happened. They certainly didn't. Nobody did. They knew that this particular family I spoke to before, the daughters disappeared, and I had no idea what happened to them, and nor did my parents. But they thought they just evacuated them. We have a cemetery, a Jewish cemetery in Hamelin. It's a beautiful cemetery, and I don't ever remember it being defaced. I never heard of it. So maybe there wasn't that much going on in Hamelin. It was all Nazis, and, you know, but not so much anti-Semitism.
This is the cemetery. It was closed.
It was closed. I remember the gates on it. But I don't think it was ever vandalised or defaced.
What did Hitler mean to you? You know, you've explained about his birthday, and you used to do Heil Hitler. But did you sort of hear Hitler or ever see him? Did you go to the cinema and see newsreels?
Oh, yes. Cinema? I can't remember. Did we go to cinema? No, we were too young to go to cinema. And we didn't have television, of course. But we heard him on the radio. Oh, yes, we did. Oh, definitely. You know, we heard these rousing speeches and this voice, you know.
Were they rousing?
Oh, very much so, yes. He was a wonderful orator. I mean, when I hear the voice now, it makes me cringe. But, you know, as a child, there was something there. You know, you thought, oh, yes, you know, he's believing this. And we are a great nation, even as a small child. You know, you believe in this, you know. I mean, if I say to my little grandson now, he's the same age, he's almost six, you know, you have to do this. Oh, yes, Omar, yes, you know, he believes in it too, in whatever I tell him. So, you know, you hear this voice and you see this picture and everybody tells you he's wonderful. Of course he believes, you know.
How about the other leaders, you know, people like Goering and Goebbels? Did they impinge at all on a young child's life, the image of them?
Not much.
What also did you think about the British? You know, your image of the enemy, as it were.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Of course, they were enemies. Yes, we were told they're enemies. They're all enemies. The Americans and the British are enemies, yes. But I don't think that as a child I really felt. Oh, I tell you what I did. Yes, the one thing I did work out for myself. When we were lying face down in our cellars, and you know, you sort of heard this whizzing above you, and you think, oh my goodness, is it coming now? I used to say to myself, this is incredibly unfair. The man up there who drops this bomb doesn't know me. Why does he do this to me? Why doesn't he come down so I can kick him? You know, but what? Well, he doesn't know my family, he doesn't know my mum, he doesn't know my grandmother, so why should he drop bombs? And to this day, you know, when I hear about bombing Kosovo, I absolutely cringe, you know? It's terrible. People should not do that. Anyway, this is what I felt as a child. Very unfair.
What sort of social life existed, if any, for a young child? And this would be a child from the age of 3 going on to 9, wouldn't it be?
Yes. Well, we played in the street when it was, you know, clear. We had no toys. Well, we did have toys and doll's houses and things like that, which came out at Christmas, stayed with us for about a month after Christmas, and then were taken away again. And then next year they appeared again with different curtains or with added chest of drawers or a few more bits of cardboard in the little shop and stuff like that. And you know, it was a very it's very rewarding to anticipate, oh, I wonder whether this daughter is coming back again, you know, and what is in it this time. It was very simple pleasures. We had very simple pleasures. We used to play in the woods when we were safe. We used to dig caves, you know, and I remember once we had this wonderful cave which we dug underneath a pass which used to go up fairly steeply to the woods. In fact, in later years it collapsed and I had to reroute the whole pass in another way, and that was all our dreams. But I remember we were saying, well, we have caves and we're going to live in these caves, now where are the provisions? But there wasn't all that much to eat, you see, so we were all detailed, with a whole gang of kids, you know. Well, you have to go and get some provisions. So I was caught by my grandmother in our little larder, where it was pinching, I can't remember, a pot of jam or something like that, you know. And she said, what are you doing? I said, well, I really have to take this, you know, otherwise I'm going to be in trouble. Everybody's playing this. So I said, yeah, but, you know, we had a social life. That was our social life, you know. Yes, and sometimes we played in the craters, which was great fun, you know. Some of the craters weren't that deep, so in winter when there was snow, we used to go in there with our sledges and stuff like that. Yeah, it was simple, very simple. But you know, it wasn't an unhappy childhood. It wasn't. You know, I didn't ever feel that I was deprived. Because everybody was in the same boat. And we did have a wonderful time, you know. Sometimes I used to escape my family and go to this bunker, because I was really quite scared of bombs. And you couldn't hear the planes, you see. And in this bunker, it was sort of fairly deep and very nicely reinforced. And they had parties down there, you know. People were dancing and there was music. It was wonderful. And I used to say to my mum, why don't we just all go there, you know. But my mother didn't want to leave the house, you know. It was too much. I think my grandmother was well enough to sort of walk, you know. But yes, I mean, it wasn't all bad. You know, we did have. I had a good childhood. I didn't, as I said, I never felt I was losing out.
Did you collect shrapnel like a lot of the kids did in this country?
Yes, we did. We did. We had all sorts of bits and pieces. I have no idea what, you know, became of it. But oh yes, that was treasure. That was really treasure. Shrapnel was treasure. Oh yes. When this warehouse was bombed, there was a lot of treasure there. Because every now and then we used to dig in this rubble, and every now and then we would find a pencil, or we would find some sweets, you see. It was great fun. And of course, it was great, great treasure. I have no idea what happened to it, I'm sure it got chucked out at that time.
In this country during the war, and I remember as a small child myself, the popular songs were very important. People like Vera Lynn and Anne Shelton, I think, was another woman. And, of course, we had Glenn Miller who came over, you know, the Americans. Mm-hmm. Was there anything like that in Germany, so far as it impinged on your life?
Yeah, we had Marlene Dietrich, didn't we? We had Marlene Dietrich singing For der Laterne. And there was a lot of, there were a lot of patriotic songs, of course, you know. And there was, what was the name of this man? Hans Albers. He used to sing songs of the sea, and I remember that. He always said it was music, yes. Yes. Is that? Yes, I suppose it was a sort of a very new type. Music. We had that too, but I cannot remember most of the singers, you know, but definitely my lady. Mm-hmm.
How were you coping with clothing as the war advanced, sort of 1944 into 45?
Yeah.
What sort of things would you have been wearing in the, you know, the seasons as they were?
One thing of course was, in my case, I always had to wear what my sister had worn, and she grew out of it. And if I grew out of it, then my younger sister had it, you see. So it was sort of handed down. But I remember my grandmother. She was, as I say, a very good needlewoman, and she was a wizard of cutting down one or two of her dresses and making dresses for the children or for the girls out of it. As for warmth, no, we didn't. I don't think we had wool. I can't remember. But sometimes she used to unravel old jackets, old cardigans and stuff like that, and re-knit them. And I used to complain that sometimes when I grew out of a skirt or a dress, it was the bottom was cut off, a piece of different material was put in the middle, and then the bottom was sewn on again. And I used to be so embarrassed that I had to go to school like that, but I mean, most kids went to school doing the same thing. I think my grandmother really was a genius in this sort of thing. You know, she was very, very good. And so was my mother. I mean, my mother learned an awful lot, you know, during the war. And my mother used to say to me in later life, and I said to her, I love cooking, and I know I'm a good cook. And I used to say, well, I learned this from my grandmother. And she said, no, your grandmother didn't like cooking. But I'm convinced it was my grandmother. But anyway, whatever. Yes, clothing was a problem. Was a great problem. And there was also something, it just comes back to me, sacks which had sugar in. And somehow they used to get hold of these sugar sacks and revel them. They can't have been woven. Oh, they could have been woven. Yes, they could have been woven. They wouldn't be knitted, would they? And we used to have socks knitted out of them. And I remember they're incredibly scratchy. They were quite coarse. And they used to sort of give us rashes, you know. But anything. I mean, anything they could find, they made clothes out of, you know.
How about footwear?
Oh, yeah, that was a problem, of course. Again, you know, if my sister grew out of her shoes, I got them. But I remember once, again, this was after the war. We used to go, as children, we used to be drafted in to go into the fields to either pick all the bugs off the potato plants, or we used to pick peas. I remember that. And one day, and we didn't have any shoes, and quite often we were barefoot. Yeah. And we used to, my sister and I, we went to this farm, and oh, and we were given porridge for lunch. You know, this was one meal that my parents had saved. My father was back by then. And my sister and I were stuck on one of these farms. I can't remember why we didn't get transport back. It was about 5 kilometres away from Hamelin. And we walked all the way home, and we tried to sort of hitch a lift with the odd car that came by, but nobody took us. And I remember we came home, and my father had managed to get us both a pair of shoes from some factory, which was sort of seconds or something. My father was amazing. He went around scrounging everywhere, and I remember going on my bicycle, which was actually my grandma's bicycle, and it was very old, and we used to go into the villages, and we used to ask whether we could pick off the windfalls of pears and apples and things like that. I mean, basically it was begging, you know, but there were a lot of mouths to feed, you know, so you had to do this. And we used to, well, again, it wasn't bad. And the other thing was firewood, of course. They turned all our gas supplies off during the war. We didn't have any gas supplies. So we had a wood-burning stove in the kitchen, on which we also cooked. And because there wasn't any coal, there was certainly, we used to go in the woods and collect woods, I mean, the sprigs. You know, there wasn't a bit of bracken or anything on the ground in the woods anymore. And we had a lot of woods in Hamelin because people used to pick it up. And I remember once or twice we pinched some cut logs and sort of disguised with a lot of twigs and stuff, you know. Thank God we didn't get caught, but if we had, it would have been very, very serious. And this was again during the war still, when my father wasn't there. But people were ingenious, actually.
How did your health stand up? You know, you were saying how at the end of the war you were very weak and had to have jabs,
yes,
and all sorts of,
yes,
things.
Yes.
But, you know, during the war, do you have memories of that? You know, did you all keep well? Or?
Oh, yes. We didn't really think of, we had the odd cold, I'm sure we must have had. But on the whole, I think, you know, we just kept going. I don't know why and how. But when I look at it today, you know, people are not that healthy anymore, are they? Or they're worried about their health. I don't think they had any time to worry about their health. I know my grandmother was very ill. She had some sort of stomach complaint, and she was in and out of hospital, and she had a couple of operations. But as children, I'm not aware that we were actually ill or had the odd thing, I suppose. But I don't think we.
Did you have letters from your father? Did you write to him?
Yes, we did. We did. He used to send these wonderful postcards, mainly postcards from Italy. They were all sort of angels and stuff like that. I remember that. Oh, yes, he used to write. And my mother used to send him bake cakes and put money in it, you know, and sent it off to him. But I think in Italy he was okay. I mean, he wasn't in that much danger, I don't think. You know. I think Russia was worse for him.
You know. Were you aware yourself of what was happening in the war, you know, as a young child, the sort of how the German victories turned to defeats?
No.
Did it impinge
Not
at all?
Not much, no. I mean, all I felt... We didn't discuss politics. I don't think my mother was ever a political animal. No, we didn't discuss politics much. I do remember thinking as a child, as a woman, all this got worse, enough is enough, I've had it. You know, I don't want this anymore. And there must be something wrong if they can't stop it. If this great man, Hitler or whatever, and all these people cannot stop that. Surely we are not winning anything, you know. I remember thinking that as a child. But basically, no, we didn't discuss that. I mean, I think we were too busy trying to survive, in a way, you know, trying to feed and keep warm. That's the other thing, keeping warm, you know. Because there was a yard, a coal yard, near... it wasn't the railway station, it was a goods station. All the children used to go up there, and we used to sort of, with our little fingers, scrounge a bit of coal in and take it away until they chased us again, you know. But we did anything to, you know, get fuel for the stove, because there wasn't any coal. It was all sort of kept for the Great War effort, I'm sure, you know. And the bit of wood we had, and how quickly does wood burn?
Were there very stringent conditions when there was a raid on, you know, when the alert went?
Mm.
Did you, for instance, have blackout?
Oh, yes, yes, we had to have blackouts, yes, so we had to, sort of blinds, actually. We had blinds on our windows, and then later on we had cardboard on the window, and then the glass went. But, yes, we did, and we all had to go into the cellar, and we all had a little bag and a gas mask. Every child had, or every person had their own gas mask and a sort of a survival kit, I suppose, you know, pants and this and that, you know, little sort of bag. Yes, oh yes, definitely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And we all went into the cellars. And in fact, towards the end of the war, we lived in the cellar for about a week. We couldn't go upstairs because it was very frightening and the bombs were dropping. And of course, I was shooting because of the silly thing that they, you know, blew up the bridge, and there was artillery fire, and so we just lived in the cellar. And we cooked on a little sort of stove. I can't remember where that came from, but anyway, and the whole house, everybody in the house lived in the cellar. We had bunk beds and so on. And then one day, we heard this incredible banging upstairs. We lived on the ground floor, flat. And iron banging, I mean, thud. And the great Americans had arrived, you see, to liberate us. And my first thought was, thank God, they can't bomb their own people. That was I never forget that. So I was very happy. And everybody was absolutely petrified, as you can imagine. And we had buried Mein Kampf, the book. And my mother had a mother cross, because she had four children. She was sort of, you know. And that was buried, which is such a shame, because we never found it again. No, it was burned. Sorry, my mother's cross was burned. And Mein Kampf was burned, that's right. And, of course, the Americans came, and instead of opening the doors with their handles, because nothing was locked upstairs, I mean, our flat, all the doors were open, they just pushed all the doors in with their big boots, and then the result was none of the doors shut for weeks, you know. And so they came, and it was terribly funny, really. The old, the mother of the owner of the house, she was a fairly old woman, she suddenly decided she was going to go up nobody wanted to go up the cellar steps, you know, and open the door to the main hall. So she took a white sheet, and she was very brave, and she went on, and she opened the door, and there was this American, and she said, "Uncle in America, Uncle in America." And my mother absolutely collapsed with laughter. Anyway, all they wanted, they searched all the rooms, you know. And they looked for guns, of course, and they looked for men. And none of them were around. And there was this wonderful bowl of my grandmother's favorite spread, which she put on bread, this semolina stuff. And I wanted to get rid of it, so I said to this guy.
This guy?
I said, "Do you like this?" And he put his finger into the bowl and he licked it and he said, "Ugh." I said, "Come on, take it." In German, of course, because I didn't speak any English. But that's wonderful. And, you know, suddenly I felt safe as a child.
Yes, I was very interested when you said the Americans came and we were liberated.
Mm-hmm.
You used that word. Mm-hmm. Is that how you felt?
Oh, totally. Because the bombing stopped, you see. I think the bombing was the worst, as far as I was concerned. I know we were very lucky we didn't get hit, but a lot of people did. And it, you know, this fear that it's going to be you next, and this unfairness of it as a child.